listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Gary Riley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It is Series 10, Episode 8, coming your way this week. A big week, of course. It's Kieran Burke and Gary Riley with you once again. We're brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. And our charity bet sponsors this season are Bar One Betting. I'm sure they'll be taking plenty of business on the big game in Prague this week. Gary Riley, how are you?
I'm very good. Nervous as hell. After so long waiting to get to this point, you know, looking forward to the week and the build up and all the talk and the shite. I'm really apprehensive of the whole thing now.
Yeah, it's great to see the buy-in though. I suppose we all knew it would be a big week and everyone, all eyes will be on it come Thursday, but I was going through the airport today back from Brussels doing a bit of Belgian Pro League there over the course of the weekend and landed back today. And I know a lot of people seen my tweets that I had up. I threw up a couple of pictures of a few posters that they've thrown up in the airport and people are going mental for it. I actually tweeted, I was like, only the Ireland football team could get people so excited about a poster in an airport. Just go, like, no other sport. And I'm not one of these people that likes, you know, comparing sports the way...
I do.
Greatest game of hurling ever seen every 5 minutes. But we said it at the time after the Budapest game. You'll never see scenes like that in pubs and clubs all over the country for any other sport. You know, the excitement levels are absolutely through the roof. I'm a bit different to you. You've been every pod we've done for the last 3 months. You've been like, countdown to Prague. Mm. Whereas, like, I suppose I've been so busy. Not that you're lying around doing nothing, but I nearly have another game every week to look forward to commentating or podcasts or whatever. And it was kind of on the back burner. But going through the airport today, I was getting seriously, seriously excited.
Oh, yeah. But, like... You know, apart from me, like, taking the piss out of, like, how many sleeps left and all of that stuff, like, it's actually here now and you're this is going to define the rest of the year, really. I was saying to one of the lads there, like, you know, this is going to change the course of this country. If we qualify for the World Cup, everything's going to be based around it. And, you know, I think that there was an article last week, if Ireland qualify, we're going to change the, you know, license and laws and all sorts of shit, like, you know, probably need a couple of extra hospitals built in between now and the World Cup if that's the case. But yeah, look, it's going to be it's a massive week. Just can't wait to just be over there and looking at it and seeing the boys come out with a comfortable 3-0 win on Thursday,
please God. Your mate, what's his nickname again? Ditsy? Yeah.
David McGoldrick.
Yeah, I always forget his nickname. He didn't get in the squad after all that.
Yeah, I think Heimer was asked about it last week. I think I can see why he wasn't. You know, he's been out of the national team for quite a while, which is fair enough. But... You know, some of the goals that he has scored over the past while, I was saying it to one of the lads in work actually, just, you know, I can imagine how big his chest will be, you know, after the last couple of months he's had, like, he's, everything's going in for him, the confidence that he would be having, you know, throw him on for 10 minutes, next thing you know he scores an absolute cracker, or lobs a keeper from, you know, 10 yards out or something like that. I know that goal was a few months ago, but I just saw it come up again today. I'm not really, I'm kind of indifferent about the team.
I was just going to say that someone said to me the other day in work, they were like, what do you think of the squad selection? And I've always been this way. It's not just this game. It's not that I don't care, but I'm going to support whoever's there. Obviously, if there was like a major absentee or, you know, a big stuff, like years ago was obviously Wes Hoolahan, poor Trapattoni, who was sick in the teeth of getting asked about Wes Hoolahan and who was the other player he admitted that time as well.
I'm not sure about that.
Andy Reid.
Right, okay.
Remember, that was a thing for a couple of months where he was in every single interview. Why are you not calling up Andy Reid? And all this, there isn't like a case of that. There's no like big name that's been excluded this time around.
Yeah.
So I'm like, these are the players that are going. I'll be there. I'll support them. And whatever happens, happens. I'm never one that like gets too caught up in the whole squad selection.
Because if you actually remember the morning of the Wales game in Cardiff in 2017, we were all standing around the airport waiting to fly over, and word came through that Shane Long was out with the squad.
All right, okay. Don't actually remember that, but go on.
And I remember, like, we were all standing at the gate, and it was just fucking and blinding, and Jesus and Mother of God and Holy Mary and all the rest of it, like. Mm. And, you know, like, it was a bit of a concern. And then we're all on the plane, and, like, everybody talking ring, like, and it kind of just melted away.
Yeah.
You were kind of like, okay, Shane Long isn't there. They'll bring someone else in. Darren Murphy came in, actually.
Jeez, good man. You have a great memory. Fair play to you.
Yeah, well, I was talking about this the other day, so I didn't have time to have this in the chamber for the pod. But he also played against Salford Town in the FAI Cup final 2004.
Did he? Yeah.
He did indeed. Come on, I think.
This is great research. Fair play.
Well, I was at the game in 04. I'm sure you were as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he came. I think he was 19 or something like that. Longford Town obviously running out 2-1 winners that day. But yeah, like, I think no, I might be completely wrong on that. just to be clear, great research, my whole. But yeah, no, he came on and he actually did quite well. Because we were Ireland at the time, or in that game after McLean got the only goal of the game, but it was serious pressure, and on a number of occasions he dragged the team forward, really by himself. So you know, there's always going to be a player that's going to step up and make the difference. I think in a lot of games down through the years, we've had players step up. Even for a moment in 2017 playoff for the World Cup in Russia, we played quite a good game out in Copenhagen, and I was at that game, and it was one of the coldest nights of my life. And then we had, you know, Shane Duffy step up a few days later to get the opening goal, and then obviously Ireland were absolutely annihilated on the night. But like, players do step up and make a difference. It just happened to be on that night there was a lot of Danish players that decided to do that. So like, it's great news obviously today, you know, people coming through and a lot of news coming out, like everybody's here and fit, you know, no one had a breakdown between the squad announcement and today. So that, obviously, that's positive news. And that's obviously as well, on a separate note, it's a thing that Heimer and the team don't have to think about.
Yeah.
You know, oh Jesus, where am I going to put this lad? Oh, I can't put him there. He's this, and you know, blah blah blah. I am kind of concerned about Vail coming into the team at this point. You know, World Cup playoffs. I know he's actually having quite a good season. To be honest with you, I knew nothing about him before this announcement, but I know he's having a good season for QPR, and he has a lot of international experience at underage level. I suppose it is a different kettle of fish, captain, and you know, an English underage team, 2 silverware. So it is a good achievement, but I'm not 100% sure on that. I know we are light in midfield.
Who's he keeping out? Or,
well, kind of goes, I don't know, did he? No, he's a midfielder, but
I could be totally wrong, but there's no really glaring omissions that I can think of. I know Fessy's squad, but he was very poor in the last couple of games he came on.
He was cat against Portugal in the Aviva. You know, but also like Ida Ida's in the squad, he's not fully fit, he hasn't played a game in a while.
Mm.
I think he had 20 minutes there at the weekend or the previous weekend, or someone was shouting on to me about that. Like, I think though, this could definitely be a case of a few Seamus Coleman type performances. Not playing football, next thing you know, throw on a green shirt and you're an absolute madman.
Mm.
I'm not saying that's the case, and not all of the players have that capability, but this is, you know, if you think back to the squad that went to Korea, Japan in 2002, how many of them thought I'd never even get within an ass's roar of another World Cup, and I'd retire. You know, that's a tough realization for a lot of people in that team. So, excuse me, Euros are one thing, but the World Cup is a totally different kettle of fish. And while I'm quite nervous and all the rest of it, I have no doubt in my mind that by the next time we're talking, we'll be on the way to the World Cup.
Please God. And either way, we will be continue to be led by Heimir Hallgrímsson now for the next few years. That was the other big story of the week, the big story of the week, contract extension. How do you feel about that? Some two different schools of thought, I suppose. Some people feel, you know, did they jump the gun given it before the playoffs? Other people feel it's a good decision. What's your view on it?
Obviously been quite critical of Heimir in the past, and his background team, pretty much all of them, really. I don't mind standing over that. You know, while November was sensational, it really threw a face on a lot of bad performances. Let's be honest about it. A lot of going behind in games, pulling games out of fire. Armenia in itself, was that a fireable offence? You know, had the FEI more money, would they have got rid of him? You know, I know it doesn't really matter now, I don't give a shit, but like, could that decision have been made if they were able to buy out the rest of his contract? Very possible. But then on the other hand, like, maybe you couldn't have fired him because you gave Kenny so much time. So there's obviously a lot of stuff, and we're rewriting the history books to a degree. I am supportive of him getting the contract now. Probably not a huge queue of people for the job. And he has got us to a World Cup playoff. So I think that's as much, like, see, at the end of the day, we finished second in the group. But what else is there?
Yeah, so like my viewpoint on it, in Budapest, even when we got to 2-2, I was thinking if we don't win this, I probably still would get rid of him.
Right.
But when you look at it, the objective was to get a playoff, and he's done it by hook or by crook. He's done it. He's got us there. So I think he probably does deserve a new contract. I can understand the school of thought, why do it now? But also,
he'd be looking for an extra 200 grand or 300 grand.
Even aside from that, we're pretty much guaranteed a place at Euro 2028. I'd imagine the FAI want a bit of stability, a bit of certainty going into that. So why not keep him on? And I don't know, this obviously doesn't come into the consideration from an FAI point of view, but he does seem a genuinely nice fella. I'm quite happy to see him staying on. He's been taking in a lot of league games recently. I know he was down in Oriel Park there recently, and I know a couple of people that got to get a picture with him and shake hands, and everyone just said what an absolute gentleman. So you know, I'm delighted for him, really, to be honest.
True enough. Yeah, like, look, I'm happy for everybody. Like you know, I'm happy for my biggest enemy in the state, I'm happy for at the moment, because everybody's going to be enjoying this week, and please God, enjoying it the following week. So to be honest with you, I don't really give two shits about the nuts and bolts of it, or how they're getting there, or who's going to play in, and who's flying over, who's in the squad. I just want it to happen. And as you said, I don't give a shite who they put onto this team, onto the pitch on Thursday, if they can get the job done. So I'm not really much in the mood for strong analysis on like whether X or Y should have got another contract. I think there'll be plenty of time for that if we don't qualify. There'll be 4.5 years looking for another World Cup. So, please God, lads, just do it.
Yeah. So look, that's a look ahead to Prague. Let's get stuck into League of Ireland matters. The big breaking story today was obviously Trivella's statement. Really, I was in Brussels Airport this morning, 8 o'clock local time there.
Were you in Brussels, were you?
8 o'clock local time there, 7 o'clock Irish time, email came through. I was like, this is a very interesting time, particularly you consider what time it was in the States. Now, maybe it was a pre-arranged. I would imagine someone was sitting up in wherever they're based over there.
That's insane, yeah.
Yeah, I'd imagine it was pre-arranged. But email came through. She's been removed from her position as director and co-chair. She since released a statement, more of an open letter to the fans and to the League of Ireland community, really. We've shared both of the statements on our X account, so you can get them there. But what do you make of the whole thing?
I don't know, private company does something with private chairman, employee, person. Like, I'm not that cut up about it, really, to be honest. I know a lot of people are and protest this and all that and the all this and that and the other. And I'm going to preface what I'm going to say next by, I understand it's not necessarily people's requirement to make a solution for what I'm about to say, but, you know, Trevella go, and then what happens? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that is the fear. That's what Drogheda fans are probably juggling with.
Like,
they feel morally this is wrong and they want to take a stand against it, but they also realize that this is a very ruthless business, football, and if these people decide to pull the plug, it could have absolutely massive ramifications for the entire club.
Yeah, but like Trevella have been a net positive for Drogheda since they came in, have they?
Yeah, bar the
European shit.
Bar the European shit, bar this two big bars, you know. two big fumbles. But yeah, they've gone full time. Kevin Doherty has spoken about what an impact that's made to him personally, to the players. I think we saw the fruit of that already with their great performances last season. They've cleared off the debt. They bought the stadium back from the FAI.
Even on that, and I know the FAI would have been kind sellers. Do you know what I mean? Like, they don't want to be owning grounds on behalf of clubs. But like, how would that have even been on the 50-year roadmap if Trevella weren't involved at the moment? Just as an example for that one thing. Probably not. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was going to take someone that had to come in and be like, we're running this show now. You've agreed to sell it to us. And they have been, as by all measures, a positive with regard to Drogheda. They have plans to develop the stadium, which it does need a serious amount of. But they're doing it all. They've brought the team. They've won an FAI Cup. They brought the team full time. They bought the stadium back and cleared off the debt. Like, is this I'd go as far to say that I think, while taking Joanna Byrne's statement into account today, I don't think it was tenable for her to go. I think she should have left of her own accord, to be quite honest. I don't think it was feasible to operate in that department. You know, like it was clear that Trevella had no confidence in Joanna Byrne for whatever number of reasons, rightly or wrongly. It doesn't really make a bag of difference whether it was right or wrong. They've come to that decision and they own that club. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'd say half the people listening to this pod think their manager is a bollocks.
But how also, are you in?
No. I mean, like, their employment manager is a bollocks. You know what I mean?
He
hasn't a clue what he's talking about. She's an idiot and all the rest of it. But also, they're their manager. They tell you what to do and then you get money. I know it's not exactly great and everybody can have their ideas about stuff, but like, unfortunately, they own the club. And if they didn't see it as tenable, I know Joanna Byrne said that there was a forward or, you know, an arrangement or an agreement, an understanding of X, Y, and Z. But they've decided that based on their interpretation of what she said, it wasn't tenable anymore. And I think when it came to that point, I think it would have been better for Drogheda if Joanna Byrne had stepped down at the time.
You don't
disagree. You don't agree with me on any of that.
No, I'm not. I don't want to cut across you. I'm interested to hear your viewpoint. I know that what you've just said probably won't be a very popular.
That's okay.
Viewpoint. I'd imagine it's probably very much against the grain. But I can fully see what you're saying. Again, I just feel really sorry for Kevin Doherty and the players. Now, in some ways, look, this is, I wouldn't say it's the end of it. It'll be interesting to see what kind of response, if any, there is from the fans at upcoming games. But in some ways, this is, you'd think, the beginning of the end of the whole thing. I'm not sure how long the ramifications will drag on for and what exactly will happen, but in some ways, this has been building, and it was typical. I said it on last week's pod. I was like, well, that's kind of gone quiet in the last few weeks. We'll see what happens. And the very next day, typical podcast fashion, there was a development where the official letter was sent to tell her pretty much to resign. And then she came and fired back. And luckily from Kevin Doherty's point of view, I suppose he was away from home on Friday. He was up in Derry, so I don't know how much of the national press was up there. I don't know, that was he asked about the whole thing, because I was at the Louth Derby when it kind of was first kicking off, and his post-match interview was absolutely dominated by that. The first four or five questions, I think it went on for seven or 8 minutes, where it was just all about the off-field stuff. He was delighted when he eventually got asked a question about the football. So I don't know whether he had to deal with that again on Friday, but he's going to have to deal with it again this week, I'd imagine. But then we should be kind of looking at the back end of it a little bit. So now that there is a decision made, as unpalatable as it'll be for some people, it might just allow the manager to start focusing on football again.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Like, unfortunately, you know, it's a good time for it to happen, really, for a playing personnel point of view. There's no Premier Division this weekend, so... And it'll obviously be, the big talking point will be Ireland. I'm sure reporters and people will remember what went on this week, or over the weekend, I should say, with Joanna Byrne. But really and truly, I do feel bad for Kevin Doherty. He's answering questions that has really nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
You know, asking him to make a comment about half of that shit. As I said, it's really nothing to do with him. It's like, you know, a local butcher sponsored the team. Have you anything to say about that, Kev? I appreciate the sponsor, but like, I'm not going to start. He's not going to go on a tirade about, you know, meat and killing animals for meat. Like, you know, the climate ramifications for having cattle. Like, what do you want from the man? Like,
he's obviously a manager I've interviewed a lot down the years, and one of the great things is he's very open and honest. He'll give you his honest viewpoint. He probably needs to, like, Stephen Bradley recently was asked about a lot of off-field stuff at Rovers, and he just gave the line, speak to the club about it. And as unpopular as that is, when you're a journalist, you're looking for that, always looking for that sound bite, particularly for the podcast. But you know, that's probably the way to do business. Certainly the way that you watch the Premier League, or that they're trained to the T, aren't they? It's all very sanitized. So maybe Kevin Doherty needs to take a leaf out of Bradley's book a little bit and step away from it. I know that's not his style. He's very good. He wants to give his opinion, but he probably needs to protect himself a little bit too.
Yeah, in your opinion, do you think that Joanna Byrne should have stepped aside when Travella said that it's time to go?
It's tough. Like, again,
like who was that for? Was it for the best for Drogheda or the best for Joanna Byrne?
Well, like, we don't know the goings on behind the scenes, and
we don't. Just before you finish, like, I'm not saying that Joanna Byrne hasn't contributed an untold amount of time and effort and love and everything else to Drogheda United. I'm not saying that for a second, but now she entered a position that the owners wanted her to leave. You know, how was it helping Drogheda United Football Club to maintain, you know, keep that position after that point?
Like, again, we don't know the conversations and the stipulations behind the scenes.
Certainly not.
A lot of people are saying, oh, you know, if she dug the heels in and refused to leave, that the owners might pull the plug. So you're in a situation there where perhaps morally she's done the right thing and she's stood up for her beliefs and her right to have those beliefs, beliefs that I think the vast majority of people in this country would fully endorse. But the outcome is extremely damaging for the football club. And she's not someone that was just parachuted into that position. She's someone that has a huge connection and affiliation and love for the club. So I'm sure she doesn't want to do harm to the club. So if she felt that threat was there, that possibility was there, would she have stepped away? You know, there's a lot of different sides to the coin here. None of it pleasant or overly palatable.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that at all. And as you know, and as you said, we're not privy to the whole lot, but we definitely can take what was put out in statements over the last 24 hours or so.
I think it's fair to say there's only one side that comes out looking anyway good from this, and it's certainly not the Travella side of things. I mean, some of their statements have been extremely poor, extremely contradictory. The initial statements where they spoke about, oh well, it's not our, the whole Ireland Israel thing isn't our concern. Our concern is criticism of UEFA, criticism of the FAI. You don't have to Google too hard to find Travella Group doing exactly that last year during the European debacle. So a lot of what they've put out there doesn't stand up to scrutiny, whereas I think Joanna Byrne has been very consistent throughout that, look, she feels the issue here is the statement she released in regards to a geopolitical matter. So, as I said, I think one side here has come out with a lot of reputational damage, and I'm not sure they'll recover from it, because not to go over old ground, we've kind of trotted this out before, but they had just about clawed themselves back from the brink in the eyes of the fans after the European mess last year, and now this, and this is a lot more of a toxic situation as well. So I'm not sure the owners will recover from this in the eyes of the draw of the supporters. And if a real apathy does set in there towards Travella, will they still feel like, right, we're up in sticks here, we're not going to take this? So it's probably been a very dark day for everyone associated with Drogheda, I would suggest.
I think that's overstating it a bit, to be quite honest. Look, it's not ideal by any stretch, but a football club still has to be ran, and it doesn't have to be done at absolutely any cost, but it still has to be ran until it can be ran no more. I don't think this is a existential thing for Travella and Drogheda. I think they'll, you know, this will pass, and that'll be that.
I suppose the fan reaction will play a big part in that. We'll see. They have it's probably good news for Travella that it's the international break. Drogheda's next game is at home to Bohemians. I wouldn't be surprised there if the away fans make their feelings known as well, maybe a show of solidarity towards Joanna Byrne. So that will be a game to keep an eye on in a few weeks' time. But a bit of breathing room for everyone is probably required. And imagine Kevin Doherty in particular is absolutely delighted that he has a week off. We'll move to league matters on the pitch. We'll look back at Friday night. We'll not go into depth on all these games this evening. But Waterford were beaten 2-0 by St. Pat's. Derry City 2, Drogheda United 2, Bowes 1, Dundalk 1. Great game on the telly, that one. Really enjoyed that. Rovers 2, Galway 0, and Sligo Rovers beaten 1-0 by Shelburne. I suppose the two big stories for me, Dundalk's excellent performance away to Bohemians and the Derry City collapse at home to Drogheda. Where do you want to start?
I think we should start with Bowes and Drogheda. Or sorry, Dundalk. Excuse me. I didn't get seeing much of this game. I did see the goals, and
I can fill in the blanks.
Yeah, I think, was it one of Bo's worser performance?
It was.
And the reason that I wanted to ask you that specific question was, and I kind of touched on a similar theme last week. Bowes were conceding a lot of shit goals last year. They were dropping points from strong positions a lot of times last year. And if you remember, they were gaining a lot of points by last kick of the game, heroics. So very easily it could have been a different face on the bowl season last year. But they've been much better up front and at the back. Probably a lot down to Patrick Hickey and Sam Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And other players being more productive. They're going to have off nights to some degree. You know what I mean? So that's probably okay. I don't think this is... Probably it says more about, we'll say, Dundalk's hard work and hardiness to stay in the game more than Bowes not being...
Oh, it wasn't that way. It wasn't a case of Dundalk staying in the game. Dundalk were the better team for large periods of the game. A lot of people, and even the pundits in the studio afterwards, made a lot of Bohemians appear to be a lack of energy about them in the second half. I think some of the lads in the studio pointed out every time they got a throw, the ball had to be dried off and walking over to take throws, and that there was no real energy about them. I think that was something Bowes fans mentioned a lot online after the game as well. But just from a Dundalk point of view, they went up there with missing a host of players. Danny Mullen wasn't in the squad. Vinnie Leonard's still out. Ed Irvine suspended in the midfield. And I thought that would be extremely detrimental to their chances, because you're thinking of someone like Dawson Devoy and Dervin sort of player that can maybe try and keep tabs on him somewhat, but they were without him. I think Ronan Teagan was out as well, who's been really, really impressive for me since missing some key players. And you'd think of a first division team coming up, and they probably can't be without maybe more than two first teamers, and usually it has a huge impact. Not missing all them first teamers, went up there and put in an absolutely excellent performance. Two players that really, really stood out. And we did mention him in recent weeks, that we've been surprised by just how much he's come on in the last 6 to 8 months. But Owen Kenny was electric for Dundalk. And a Ruby up front, Bohemians could not deal with him. He should have scored another one. Missed a great chance to win the game for Dundalk. But they were two players that really stood out. And again, this wasn't a case of Dundalk going up there as a newly promoted team, sitting in and, you know, waiting for their chances on the break. They went up there and they took the game to Bowes, and they played some really, really nice football. It was a hugely impressive performance from Dundalk.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think Arubi did really well for the equaliser. I thought the keeper was absolute dog shit for that. Needs to be winning that ball. Mm. There's no real excuse for it. I think Ruby's chance was like very soon after the equaliser,
wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Right into the goalkeeper's gut.
Yeah, the ears pricked at that stage.
Yeah. But look, this is the way it goes. I think it's a very credible point for Dundalk. Certainly leading into the break, you know, they'll get a lot of a boost from it, particularly with the way Bowes have started. You know, they haven't conceded. I think that's the third goal they've conceded this season. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for that even itself. So fair play to Dundalk.
Is this the start of the Bowes slide?
Not at all, no.
I don't think they'll have the stay in power, to be honest. That's not to say Bowes. They won't be in the top two or three possibly, but I don't see them winning the league this season.
I would be inclined to agree with you. I would think, though, that there will be somewhat of a title challenge that'll just run out of steam. But I think it'll be closer to the end of the season than what people might think. I don't think it's going to be a case that they'll be dead and buried by August. I think it's going to be closer to two or three games left in the season. And maybe when they need to get 3 points, they don't do it, and that's where it falls off. But I don't think it's going to be, you know, diddled by July or August.
No, definitely not. The other big story is there was Derry's collapse, 2-0 up against Drogheda. You were watching this thinking, oh, the trouble continues for Drogheda, but they came back to get a point out of the game. James McLean moved back out to a wide position at long last, but that wasn't a happy remedy in the end, because he had a nightmare.
Yeah, he's having a few of them. I think, obviously, the break is coming at the absolute right time for Derry and Tiernan Lynch. I don't know if you, he was quite short with a couple of people interviewing him there on Friday. I don't know if you heard some of the other.
I seen bits and pieces of it. I didn't realize he was a bit prickly, was he?
He was, yeah. Giving one word answers to Drive 105.
And what was the line of the questioning?
I can't rightly remember. I actually listened to it a couple of times because he just said yeah or something like that.
Right. Because I was going to actually ask, I was going to discuss about his interviews.
I wasn't prepared, listeners.
This is one of my favorite things about the league. It only takes like 3 or 4 people to tweet something. Right. And everyone just takes it as gospel. And this is the narrative then for the rest of the season, no matter what.
Oh, a la Stephen O'Donnell.
I noticed under his one of the interviews he done, he said he was going to give the players a couple of days off.
Yes.
Which to me isn't kind of a big deal because it's an international break. There's not that many opportunities in the season for players to maybe go away for a few days, etc. I wouldn't see this as a hanging offense at all. Maybe right. Did he even need to say that? Did he need to publicize that? You know, let the players go off on their couple of days off and keep it hush hush. But he announced anyway, boys. Well,
didn't we have a Derry situation a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was only last year, the year before.
That was it, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I don't think he needed to announce that. And the other thing was then, in the comment section, everyone was like, oh, another weekend off. This is so he can do his other job that he's more focused on. Now, I'm not sure
what
that references. I don't know, is he... I think, does he do a little bit of punditry up north, I think?
Oh, like an NIFL job?
Yeah, I think he's still doing a bit of that. So I was meant to kind of go looking into this to see exactly what people were referring to. But already there's the narrative out there that, you know, he's not as fully committed and focused as he should be. But I think very much the feeling is that there just doesn't seem... I touched on this before, Rory Higgins... You know, he was a Derry man, bleeds Derry City. It was that bit more painful to get rid of him, even though by the time his tenure kind of was fizzling out towards the end, people were like, right, this is the decision we need to make or whatever. I don't think there will be that kind of emotional calculation for people to make at Derry. If this isn't sorted quickly, he'll just be gone. He doesn't seem to have built a real rapport with the fans there. With the media, he can be prickly at times. I just don't think he's plumassed people as well as like Rory Higgins didn't really need to do that because he's a Derry man. He had that connection with the people. But I don't think that Lynch has built as much of a rapport with people around the club, the supporters, the local media, as he probably should have.
Yeah, because it is like, I think the most... media interested club, not them themselves, but like the media, there's, you know, they're far away from most other clubs in the Premier Division. They've BBC, they have Drive 105.
Yeah, no, they have a massive local presence. They'd be media, like Dundalk in that regard, so many different outlets, but
Like, so, you know, you have to, you know, and just on that, like I would say, you know, like I would say the First Division, you might have like part-time managers and stuff like that. You don't want to have 10 interviews and then get on a 3-hour drive home from somewhere and all this other shit. Like, but at the end of the day, these are professional managers and players and staff and all the rest of it that, you know, you do have to be making sure that you do the interviews and do them correctly. You have a number of outlets up in Derry that, you know, I think BBC and Drive 105 do radio commentary at every single Derry away game.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it is a big club and a big media club, and you have to do your stuff and your homework, and you can't be given one word answers and being prickly with some people. Yeah, if you have to answer the same question 10 times, then that's exactly what you have to do. As I said earlier about your manager and work, he's a bollocks, but unfortunately, he's the lad that pays you. You might agree with it all the time, but if you've answered the exact same question, well, Tiernan, you were shite. You threw away a 2-0 lead. Yes. Mr. Reporter, 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 10. That's correct. I made a bollocks of it myself. And this was bad and that was bad. We should have done this, should have done that. You have to do it all properly. This isn't you know, oftentimes, and we say in Ireland, oh, you know, the president goes, or Michael D went out and walked his dogs, he'd go up and chat to him. You know, we have a good enough society that you know, all of that stuff can be done.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be walls up for absolutely everything. So,
I would find the media pool around the league to be not soft. They will ask questions. As I said earlier, I was in a kind of huddle recently with Kevin Doherty, and no one was afraid to put the tough questions to him. But in terms of, like, these are managers that lose their job. They're not getting these big million-pound payouts that they're set for life. Like, mm-hmm. It must be a real pressure decision to go full-time as a manager in this league, and mortgages and families, and you could lose your job at the drop of a hat. So, like, recently, again, I was in a huddle with John Daly. They lost 5-0 away to a team that you'd view as maybe been a direct relegation rival this season. And nobody said... Nobody asked him, do you fear for your job? Do you feel under pressure? Like, there's a respect there. Yeah. Like, he's someone that's left the UK, left his family behind to come here and take that job. So people kind of have an understanding for that as well. So I would find the media pack to be very, very fair, not as vicious maybe as other leagues. So when you do see a manager then taking a little bit, or having a bit of an edge, you know, they need to, that's a game you need to play. You need to get that right. And I don't think Lynch has probably got the balance right since he came in. He's someone that's very sure of himself. Now, that can be a good thing, but when results aren't going your way, that's something that can be definitely held against you. And I think that's probably happening with Lynch at the moment. He's a man that's definitely under pressure. Just to recap quickly on the other ones, Pats with a great win. Stephen Kenny's loving life, isn't he? He's really, really animated at the end of games, fist pumping the crowd. He's pushing players over to the crowd to make sure they're getting the love. After a slow start, he looks a different man. He looks like the old Stephen Kenny once again.
Yeah, enjoying himself, and rightly so. A comfortable enough win on Friday. What else is there to say, really? A game that they that they expected to win, but they went ahead and did it. Do you think the break came at the right time for them?
Probably not. They've just got players back from injury. They're flying. That's what, 5 wins and a draw in the last 6, I think, Pats?
I think I'm right
in saying that. Yeah, 5 wins and a draw in their last 6, so everything's smelling rosy in the garden. I don't think they would have wanted the break.
Is it not a good time to maybe reset?
No, I don't think so. They had months there to think about kind of a smelly season, and they had a slow start the first couple of weeks, and now they've got motoring. So I think
they'd rather hit the road.
Yeah, keep the revs up. Just Waterford, we mentioned Derry City there. Some people thought that there might even be news during the international break in regards to these two clubs, but Who's under more pressure, Daly or Lynch, or in the same boat?
Look, I think Lynch obviously has a bit more rope. If you look at Daly, he's probably under a bit more pressure. It's just because they don't look for turning at all, really. Particularly, what week was it that Dundalk put 5 past them? Was only 10 days ago, was it?
Yeah.
That's a real bad barometer to be putting yourself against here at the minute. Like, as we mentioned before, like, even if I was a Waterford fan, or probably if it was John Daly myself, would I be saying, right, Dundalk are the team that we need to be thinking about? And then to be decimated by a direct opponent like that, I don't see it really turning at the moment. I think they're finished to an extent.
I don't see them staying up if Daly stays on, to be honest. I think
who's going to come in?
Fleet with tracksuit will come in. It's worked before. I can't remember the chap's name from last season, but anytime he
called that,
yeah. Miracle worker, but
it's not for lack of spending.
No. Like Noonan, 50k spent on him.
Rolls Royce player, all the rest of the shite that we've heard about him. Lonergan, Parkamond.
Yeah. Long gone in there now.
Yeah, like it's not bad.
Plenty of lads brought in from the UK. Yes, as you said, it's not a lack of spending. The resources are there. He's had a full preseason to work with them. It hasn't been good, and it's just there's no positive signs. Like the amount of games where they haven't scored, and that should be their strongest asset. Like if Waterford were losing games 4-3, you know, I know they did lose one last Friday 4-3, but if they were losing every week 3-2, 2-1, you'd be thinking, right, well, it's a carryover. It's the same issue as last season. They can't defend. But the fact they have those attacking players that we've just mentioned, and not only are they not scoring goals, they're not really creating many chances.
Exactly, yeah.
That's in their last four games, they've failed to score in three of them.
And pegged three in against Galway.
And four games this season where they haven't scored. Five games this season where they haven't scored, sorry.
That's just untenable.
It is, yeah.
And not only John Daly.
Four conceded against Galway, five against Dundalk, four against Derry when they were 2-0 up. That's a tragic combination. Can't score, can't defend.
It's over. Almost.
You used the word untenable there. It's definitely not far away from that.
No, I think we're there because I think the main piece is like, while well, Pat's had chances the other night and everything, but if you look at did you see the first goal there for Pat's?
I did, but I can't remember it now.
You know, it was like a shot and it kind of looped up. And it was kind of like, if you've ever seen that like skit, it's like a keeper standing underneath the crossbar and he's like looking up at the ball and he kind of thinks he's going to hit off the crossbar and bashes him in the face. It was kind of like that. The keeper couldn't get across and it wasn't a ball of any pace.
Keeper really struggled as well. He's not getting any protection in front of him, but I saw him in Oriel a few weeks ago and he looked very, very rocky. He's met a couple of clangers this season. So,
But also, like, what were you going to feel about yourself? I'm a keeper and I've left
19 goals in again in 8 games.
Exactly. Like, fuck me. You're going to be like, Jesus Christ, I'm a useless keeper. Even if you have nothing in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really matter.
The thing for me is everyone's talking about how tight it's going to be at the bottom. Waterford are the only team in the entire country now across the two divisions without a win. And they're already 6 points adrift of eighth. Now, they're only 2 points behind Sligo, but they're 6 points adrift of safety.
Yeah.
If that gets any bigger, you know, everyone's saying, oh, how tight it's going to be. Point or two will separate four or five teams. And you're the team that actually is getting caught adrift. So you are performing way below everyone else in the division. Okay, Sligo only 2 points better off, but there's been positives about Sligo. We saw them in Dundalk on the Monday night. Should have got something out of the game. They've been generally competitive enough.
Yeah.
Now, geez, they can't score for love nor money. But like that's, you're looking at Sligo and you're saying, good midfield, defence is okay. They're lacking a striker. Whereas you're looking at Waterford, they've got the strikers, but they're not doing anything with them. They've scored 6 goals in 8 games. Their defense is terrible. Their goalkeeper's a bag of nerves. There's issues all over the park.
Yeah.
So
it's nothing but shite everywhere you look, really.
I think he's in absolutely massive, massive trouble there, John Daly. Just very quickly, we'll round off other events. Shamrock Rovers, they were winners over the weekend and against Galway United and Shelburne beating Sligo Rovers by a goal to nil. That Rovers-Galway game is a mad one. I was talking to a friend of the pod, Julian Canny, there before this one. The last time Galway beat Rovers away, I think, was 2006 in the First Division. The last time they beat them away from home in the Premier, I think he said was in the 90s. Could be 1990 or 94 or something like that. There was a run where they lost 21 consecutive away games to Rovers. I think they're 31 away games without a win now against them. That must be one of the most one-sided fixtures anywhere in European football.
Sounds like it'll be up there all right. I'm just trying to think, like,
you'd obviously have games in Scotland where like Celtic could never lose to whoever and Rangers and Barcelona and Madrid. But
I need that up there. I need that shit up in Scotland. probably another Old Firm next week, is there?
I don't really have too much to say on those results. Rovers, Galway, Sligo, Shells. I just kind of wanted to hit the main talking points, really. I know we usually drill down into the games methodically.
Yeah, no, I think just a couple of points. Aaron Green scoring, Evergreen.
Against his old club as well. Against many old clubs.
Yeah, well, when you get to a certain age, every club you score against is a former club. And also Danny Grant got, I thought it was a really nice finish for the opener as well. But I think we've kind of intimated that in the last few weeks, like this isn't going to be world ending for Galway, 2-0 up in Tala, a team that they've never bet no matter how well they were doing. So not sold destroying either. So yeah.
And Shells with an important win away to Sligo. We'll go into the first division, Gaz. Look, we'll start with Longford. 2-0 winners at home to Wexford. Longford's first win of the season. This week, game week six of the first division, we saw Kerry pick up their first win, Treaty United pick up their first win, Longford Town pick up their first win. So every team in the division has now won at least a game. Longford started the ninth, 10th in the table, bottom of the table, and after a 2-0 win, they climbed to 5th. So that really goes to sum up how tight the first division is going to be outside of the top one, of course. Cork City grinding out another 1-0 win against UCD. Just to run through the results here, actually. UCD 0, Cork City 1, Kerry 1, Finn Harps 0, Treaty United 2, Athlone 0. We'll get to Treaty in a minute, actually. Cove 1, Bray 1, and then Longford Town 2, Wexford 0. But I'd have to say, Longford have had some good performances in the last, probably, 6 months of football between the end of last season, the start of this. I think of their performance in Tallow with Shamrock Rovers in the Cup last season. Probably one of their best performances of the last while. But I actually think this was the most complete performance they've had under Wayne Grove since he took over in the middle part of 2024. I know Wexford had a period early in the second half where they probably could have got back into it. But overall, from a Longford viewpoint, looked very solid at the back. Front two of Murta and Williams, they could really cook at this level if they can both stay fit. There was lots to like about the Longford performance on Saturday.
There certainly was. I think outside of that maybe 10-minute spell, as you mentioned, I thought Longford were in the driving seat pretty much at all times. I know Keane Moore had to make a couple of saves, a couple of poor finishing as well, really, for Wexford. I think Longford Town could have been 2-0 up, hit the crossbar.
Yeah. They were brilliant in the first half.
I thought they were excellent. It was one of the few, not the few times, but I definitely never really had any fear of Wexford at any point.
Yeah. I was very disappointed with Wexford.
I was indeed, yeah.
We've spoke about them, you know, missing out on the playoffs last season. One of the things I suppose that cost them maybe was a lack of experience, although, you know, they're not a bunch of kids. There was the likes of Aaron Dobbs there knocking around last year. Evan Lassam came in the middle of the season. He's played over 100 games. He's played hundreds of games at this level. There was plenty of experienced players, but they've brought in a few more. And like some of the younger lads, the likes of Caelum Harnett, Callum Flynn, that were central figures last year, they're more kind of squad players now. They're still getting their game time, but there are more experienced players across the pitch. But like, I didn't see Max Murphy, of course, coming in, who had a brilliant season last season. I didn't see much difference really between Wexford of last season and what I saw the other night. They'd be doing well to, I suppose, get maybe one of those last playoff positions, but it won't be anything beyond that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm not seeing like much growth.
No. Is that,
you know, and even just to take your point on to the next one, like what was brought on there? You know, like I thought they did well to, we'll say, bring in Dylan Hand. Didn't really feature that much on Saturday night.
No. They're a bit more direct, I think I've noticed this season, because of Jake Doyle, big handful. He was a bit of a danger, but Longford dealt with him fairly well. But they do
probably should have been sent off as well.
Possibly, but I think they do look a bit more direct. But again, I definitely wouldn't be fearing them. Wouldn't be thinking, oh Jesus, these boys, they're nailed on for a playoff.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think we've been burnt by them a couple of times, and I think Yeah, I wouldn't have much fear of Wexford for the rest of the season, to be honest.
Again, I'd like a fair bit of investment gone in there. Maybe not as much as some of the other clubs in the division, but you know they're spending a few quid. I would suggest they're underperforming at the moment. 100%. Cork City grinding out a win against UCD. We'll just kind of put that on loop really every week for the rest of the season. I think that's going to be the story of Cork's season. Kerry beating Finn Harps. Treaty Athlone, we'll go to that one actually. Treaty's first win of the season. Not for the first time. A lot of online comments regarding what seems to be a very fractured relationship between supporters and club down in Limerick.
Can I before whatever you're going to say, I'm going to say something, right? What's wanted down there? Like, we've been saying and hearing and listening to shite from Treaty fans / Limerick fans about the club this and the club that, and this lad's a bollocks and this other fella's a bollocks and this and that and the other, no matter who it is, even down to the likes of volunteers down there.
Yeah.
Right? So I think me and you on this podcast should have a rule. We don't talk about nothing other than the football down at Treaty. Because to be honest with you, I've had it up to me fucking tonsils talking this shite about all the no fans going to get, the fans are staying away. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what it is, it's not good enough down there. And I think there needs to be a bit of a reality check that doesn't seem to be wanted to be ingested down there. And this fella, as I said, or this lad and that lad, and he said this and that. Honestly, God, it's like a...
It's kind of a fair point you make, too. I suppose, because like last season, kind of the narrative out there was it's all Ciarán McCormack's problem. She's the problem around the place. She's gone. Yeah. And now there's another name. I can't remember the chap's name. I won't mention his name. There's another fella now. His name is all over socials. This fella's the problem. He's a bollocks.
Yeah. Nothing but bollocks is down there by the sounds of it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, and as you said, we had the exact same line of commentary when it was Limerick FC.
Yeah. Same yarn. So, like, to be honest with you, I've had it up. I don't want to hear about it really anymore. And you know, I can't even, you know, we'd need the entirety of ChatGPT to go through all the podcasts where we've talked about Treaty this and Treaty that and Treaty the other, and you know. People doing well and to people doing not so well, and this lad's a clown and that other lad's a clown and bollocks this and that. To be honest with you, leave it alone. I know. I think if we just talked about the game.
It's funny, like kind of one of the things that was been put out there is that, oh, you know, people have been turned away and they don't want people there. We got hammered a couple of years ago when we came on here and spoke about our experience as away supporters there, that it was extremely unwelcoming. There was like an aggro, unneeded aggro as soon as you walked in the ground. Just wasn't a very nice place to go. Wasn't a good experience. We got hammered.
Now
the shoe's on the other foot. You know, boys want
I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah.
I got my bottle taken off me or whatever other shite. And like, make no mistake, I'm sure there's valid. Some of the stuff is valid. But like it's the same complaints all the blatant time for years. So I think the new law on the Between the Stripes podcast is we're talking about nothing other than football down in Treaty.
Fair enough. Ben Feeney got a goal against his former club. That's another new we probably need to introduce. Like, stop mentioning when lads score against their former club because it's almost a given.
It's a waste of time. Yeah,
given in this league. But yeah, I thought he'd be a good signing for Treaty this season. Good to see him getting up and running. Is there any other kind of topics there?
No, I think, you know...
It all has a real inevitability about it, doesn't it?
What?
The entire division has a whole inevitability about it.
I think so. I think probably the surprising one I know, one win from anyone in the bottom six throws a different face on the season. But... I'm obviously going to talk about Longford Town as much as I humanly can. I think I've been very impressed with them this season. I know you mightn't be as impressed.
I never said that. Well, you're always putting words in my mouth, trying to get me in trouble with Wayne Groves and co.
I have some screenshots I could show you.
Oh, you're doing that to me, are you? Doing me dirty?
I never know.
Keeping the receipts.
But usually it's your shy talk, lad. No, but like, you know, I was down in Cork for the first time. I was, you know, so disappointed, but I was very happy with the performance. It gave me a lot of, you know, I was delighted to see it. I think the 2-0 win the other night, I think it's another clean sheet, which Longford would have had trouble with last year.
Oh, they look so much better at the back. Like, I suppose one, I will hold my hands up on one. Now, it's early in the season. He could make a ball, but yeah, but I hope he doesn't. Colm or him, when I was very skeptical of him signing, he has been immense and he's really bought into it. Like, he was over to section O at the end of the game the other night, fist pumping, and geez, he was loving it. We never seen that once at that loan. I suppose it was a really unhappy environment there, so it's no surprise that he wasn't going around with a smile on his face, but he very quickly become a bit of a fan favourite. Conor Irity's been sensational. McCarthy looks a real smooth defender. You know, there's just so many players I could pick out. So,
and just the point on that, like, I know Longford Town scored two on Saturday, could have been three or four. But that they've scored six and conceded six after six games.
Yeah,
so they haven't been next or near blown apart. Not very many teams have had that so far this season. And I suppose the real surprise package would be how poor Cove have been. I know we've already mentioned the Barry Coffey situation, not ideal to be missing out a player of that quality. So, you know, that's obviously a bit of a problemo. I thought Bray were robbed actually on Saturday or Friday night as well. I don't know.
We had a lot of tweets about that.
Yeah, that was a disgrace of a decision. And particularly, like, you know, Longford Town had a penalty given away for a handball, then Andy Parrish goes down the other end, loses out on a handball decision himself. Just unfortunate. And then obviously the week before, Longford got rode rock solid against CCD in the last minute of the game.
Yeah.
So, like, I know it's all, if my auntie had stones, she'd be my uncle, but there are some decisions that are going quite sideways at the moment. I thought the one in Cove to do Bray was really poor, actually. But hopefully we'll improve on that. And just actually one more point, because me and you were doing a lot of talking about the ref on Saturday. He hadn't done a lot of games.
I thought he was excellent.
Yeah. Good to hear that he was doing League of Ireland women's games. Something that
we. Yep. Arnold Hunter was the referee, and he's an interesting figure because he was kind of a big cheese up north.
And he spent some time in Italy as well, didn't he?
He's done Saudi Pro League games. He's done games in Scotland, Wales, international.
Now he's
games,
now he's hit the big time at Bishopsgate. What?
Yeah, it's just I was doing my notes obviously for commentary, and I couldn't find record of him doing any men's games since 2023. The last game he done, Longford Treaty United. Longford lost 3-0. There was two red cards, a really ill tempered game, and there was no record of him after that. And then thankfully to a few people online, they got on to me to say, you know, he's been doing women's Premier Division games. He actually picked up a real bad injury last year and had to be carried off the pitch in Sligo, but he's back fit now and did another Sligo game the weekend. He's from Enniskillen, so I'd imagine it's handy for him to do Sligo Rovers games. But no, it was good to see him doing a First Division game. I thought I seen people saying online that they thought he was tragic bad. I wouldn't agree with that.
I wouldn't agree with that.
I thought he had an excellent game. One or two decisions, of course, but once he doesn't get the major ones wrong, that's all you want from a ref. The one thing I liked about him, he took no nonsense, let the game flow, telling lads to get up and get on with it. He was quite clamping down on the time wasting, which is something we're always crying about here. And like any bit, there was kind of aggro between Jake Doyle and I think Colm or him one a couple of times. And he just stepped in between them. And he's quite a physical presence, the ref. He got built. And he was just like, this is the end of it now, lads. And that was it. I thought he managed the game and managed people really well. He looked like the sort of ref that you could actually talk to a little bit.
Yeah. Like if you came to him reasonably.
Yeah.
He'd be open to it. And I think, you know, probably that's something that isn't.
But at the same time, when he told you to shut up, he did it in quite an affirmative way. And that was it.
Yeah.
So I like that. I thought he managed people on the pitch very well.
Yeah, 100%. I'd be inclined to agree with that. Yeah, and to be 100% square, I was a bit like a shite, like a lad who hasn't refed a men's super game in quite a while. I'd be like, oh, balls. But yeah, like, you know, and as I said, even before we mentioned our Hunter at all, I was bitching and moaning about refs. Definitely big and bold enough to give credit when they do a good job. And as you said, he got all the big decisions right. I did think, though, Jake Doyle should have been sent off. And if you look back, at the replay, the reason I say that is he moved his entire body in the swinging of the arm. It wasn't like
he probably just didn't. I only seen it back at the time. I haven't seen it since. I don't think there was massive contact.
That probably saved them.
But yeah. I can fully see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right, guys, let's move on to the Between the Stripes LOI Podcast Predictions League. And just before we look ahead to the first division fixtures this week, obviously no Premier Division fixtures, we need to recap what happened last week. And you will be a man with a pep in your step going to Prague, I can tell you. Another unbelievable shooting performance from Gary Riley last week. 12 points in the Predictions League to extend your lead at the top to you're 8 points clear of me. And you're 12 points clear of the listeners, lad.
Now you have it. This is my year.
12 points for you last week. 9 points for the listeners. 8 points from me. So really, really good predicting from everyone last week. We had Dwayne Doyle from Shells playing last week. This week, our pal Max is going to play. He's going to be traveling to Prague with us, and he's going to take part on behalf of the listeners. And you might have heard us mention before that Max loves to back the draws in the first division. So I'll just throw it out straight away and tell you he's going for 4-1-1 draws this week in all bar the Longford game, where he's going for a 1-0 win to Longford Town. So 1-1 across the board for Max.
My man.
The Longford game. So let's get mine and your predictions, starting with Cork City against Athlone Town.
I think I haven't seen anything from Athlone particularly that says that Cork are going to be stopped by them. I'm going to go for a 2-0 win to Cork.
Going to follow you on that one. Lovely, we're moving through these quickly. Wexford against Treaty.
In the opposite vein, I saw nothing from Wexford the other night to be able to say that Treaty should be of any real fear in this game. I know Treaty only got their first win of the season like many other teams on over the weekend. But I think there's definitely at least a point here for Treaty, so I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Going exactly the same as well, fully the same sentiments from myself as what you said there. Bray against Kerry.
The clash of the new Astros. I feel that Bray are going to come out on top in this one. Won't be playing Salem, but I'm going to go for, I think they just have too much individual quality, really. I'm going to go for a 3-1 win to Bray Wanderers. Ooh,
you're going high scoring there. I don't think it'll be that high scoring. I'm going to go 1-0 to Bray Wanderers. Max going 1-1, as I said. UCD against Cove.
This will be an interesting game, particularly with UCD coming out the wrong side of it. Just a 1-0 loss there against Cork on Friday. You know, I think what we've kind of said already, like everybody between 4th and 10th, there's 2 points.
Yeah.
So like, there's no great differences here. But I don't think Cove are any great shakes at this moment in time.
They remind me a bit of Sligo. I think there are positives across the team, particularly from an experience point of view, but they don't seem to have someone to put the ball in the net.
The lowest scorers in the division.
There you go. Thank you. I'm going to go
for... also, just on that, they've conceded the second highest number of goals.
Yeah. I think Wexford have conceded the most, have they?
Wexford have conceded 10.
Yeah.
And Cove have conceded 9.
Nine, yeah.
And just on that, like what we're talking about, like say Longford Town, as I've highlighted already, like they've been quite steely at the back, and anytime they've lost, it's been by a single goal.
How many have Harps conceded?
Harps have conceded 8.
Okay, well, again, they're the team that many people would have had for bottom, but they've conceded slightly fewer than the other two. So,
yeah.
But anyway, yeah, no, I do think Cove and Wexford are two of the underperformers so far. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
I'm going to go for a 1-0 win to UCD.
Yeah, I wouldn't put anyone off that at all. And then Longford Town against Finn Harps, you'll be undoubtedly going for a Longford win here.
I most certainly will. An opportunity here for Town, you know, two home games in a row, back-to-back wins, definitely on the cards. And they'll also have a couple of players back that they were without on Saturday.
They'll be doing like, well to get into the team, in truth.
They will. They most certainly will. But I think having too many players to choose from is a better job than having to look at players and I need you to do a job in X position or Y position. So I'm going to go for another 2-0 win to Longford.
I've not been lazy tonight by just following you, but I'm going exactly the same. 2-0 to Longford and Max going 1-0 to Longford Town. So that was this week's Between the Stripes LOI Podcast Predictions League. And that means we can move on to the Bar One Betting sponsored charity bet. Again, no luck for either of us last week. Bo has let you down, Gary. I think as well. Yeah, you had Rovers, you had Longford, but Bo has let you down for a nice little payout. So look, we'll go again. Do you want me to go first? You want to go first?
Sure, you go first.
Yeah, I was going to channel my inner John Breyer, and hopefully we have enough listeners from the early days of the pod to get that reference. Everyone will remember mine and John's famous 10 home wins. I was going to go 5 home wins, but as you heard there, I'm not that keen on Wexford at home to Treaty. So I think I'm going to go with 4 home wins. Bray, Cork, Longford Town, and I think I said 1-1 UCD Cove, but do you know what? I might just stick with the 3 home wins. Bray, Cork, Longford. It's just over 6-1, so I'd be happy enough with that.
And look, I'll make a bollocks of it. I'll go with the 4 home wins.
Who's the fourth one?
Bray, Cork, UCD and Longford.
Grand. And that one for you would come to with a 5% ACCA boost from Bar One Betting, thanks to them. That would be over 17-1.
Good stuff.
So £191 back, including the boost, if that's to win. You want me to hit place bet?
Please do.
Lovely. There we go. We're locked in. I'll do my one later on. But that's the two bets we're going for this week. Gary goes Bray, Cork, Longford, UCD. And I'm going Bray, Cork and Longford for my bet this weekend. So once again, thanks to bar1betting.com. All the markets for the first division games this weekend are up on their website. Always gamble responsibly. 18+ gamblingcare.org. That just brings us to the hotline, Gary.
Lovely stuff.
Now, the old tweet machine was down earlier on, but I seem to be still able to access the app here. So let me just load up the tweets for this week.
I think it's back up in action now.
Back in action. I must have brought it down with all my Brussels updates.
Jesus Christ, I had to mute you there. Hold me this here, shite.
Right, so what we have, we kind of have a double hotline here because after the games on Friday night, we put out a tweet looking for people's immediate reaction. So I'll read through them and then we'll get to the hotline, which is quite first division heavy, as you'd expect this week. But on Friday we said, speak now or forever hold your peace. Brilliant Dundalk, Blues lose again, Derry collapse, Cork City win. Let's hear your thoughts on tonight's game. Kevin Brett, nice to see Paisol getting decent minutes for Galway. Galway fans have been crying out to see more of him. Thought he played well, especially considering how few minutes he's had this season. Luke McQuillan, 2 goal of the season contenders for Drogheda in the space of 2 minutes. Easy to talk about the Derry collapse, but Drogheda showed serious character in that second half.
Yeah, well, something that we didn't actually really concentrate on. James McLean again. He got road solid for the 2 goals.
Jeez, the second one is so strange for a lot of his experience. Like, his body shape is all wrong.
Yeah.
He's completely tangled himself up in knots, falls over, and Warren Davis, I wouldn't say just steps in and scores. He still had a lot to do, but McLean's tripped over his own feet there because his body shape is completely all over the place.
Completely. And like, you know, he really took a leaf out of the Mark Connolly school of defending.
I was actually thinking of you when I seen the goal. You were always going on about, oh yeah, Derry you can see this week and Connolly will be there just sitting on his arse looking at a slotted pass Brian Maher. And that's McLean was just sitting on his arse watching Warren Davis put past the new goalkeeper. So
Yeah, some things never change.
Not good. Surely he gets dropped sooner rather than later. Shane Dillon, depleted Dundalk should have won, held our own. Luke Kennedy, we won a game. He's a Treaty United fan. And I replied, how does it feel asking for a friend? But we now know how it feels as Longford fans. Christy Ryan, Ramblers going nowhere. No one to put the ball in the net. Cannot keep a clean sheet. A recipe for disaster. Shane McCourt, go on.
Just on Cove, our good pal Ethan mentioned, like, you know, we do be obviously chatting shit about the league all the time. And he made a good point, I would say, about Mikey Rowe last year, that, you know, where would have Wexford have been if, you know, Mikey Rowe didn't exist with his 20 plus goals last season. And it's unlikely that he will repeat the same feat this year, just on...
And they didn't get in the playoffs with his 20 plus goals, so...
Exactly, and... Yeah. If you compare that to, we'll say, Barry Coffey's, you know, bajillion goals last year, he's out of the picture playing in America now. And actually, well, not actually playing in America. I think, what's his name? The Moose has signed for some Vancouver team. I don't know what level that's at, but I just saw it there when Twitter started working again. Well done, Elon. Got it back online.
But, I know what these boys are at. They're all going to the States because they know Ireland's heading to the World Cup. They're just getting ahead.
Well, he's going to be in Canada, so he went to the wrong side.
He'll travel across on the day, I'm sure. Shane McCormick, if Rovers win the league, it'll be with a load of kids leading the way. Brennan, Victor, Noonan, and the two O'Sullivans, Razzie and Max Kovalevskis, to come back to future as brights. Aurelia Bennett, Dundalk's superb tonight. Looked confident and assured. Fought for every ball. Could have won. Thought everyone played well. Fans were magnificent. Also, no flares. Killer of the Oriel Moon. Happy out. Injury-ridden Dundalk. Earn a well-earned point. I think Bowes will slip down a bit. Will Tiernan Lynch still be there? Will Tiernan Lynch get lynched up there at this stage? We don't endorse the harming of any League of Ireland managers. Drew Hunter, Bowes left 2 points behind. Would not agree with that. Joxer, Daly be gone now with the break coming. John Sullivan do a Kilduff and take over a men's team from a women's team. We didn't really talk about him leaving Athlone, but it's not really our domain, I suppose. Dundalk should have beat a Bowes team tonight, created all the chances. Casper, the goalkeeper, a liability. James, no reason why Dundalk can't get into Europe this year. I would be happy with mid-table. Harry Groom and Aruby are two excellent players. Unlucky not to win with a centre-half partnership for the second half, being fourth and fifth choice centre backs, as well as the second choice goalkeeper starting. Just on that, any chance of Dundalk pushing for a European place, Gary?
No,
I wouldn't think so. Still winless since their manager's comments about Dundalk. I think it's time to let go of that, Phil, to be honest. Alan Maguire, Kilduff outsmarted Rennie and Dundalk outfought us. There was a bit of antics on the sideline. Not so much from Rennie this week. I think it might have been Detzer and Kilduff's number two, Ken Kiernan, were kind of having a bit of a sparring match over on the sideline. It's amazing how Bowes get caught up in that so often. Owen, League of Ireland ref strike again at Coleman's Park. Bray should stay second for the season, but need to start killing off teams much sooner enough. And there's someone that's uploaded a picture of that penalty incident as well that we referenced earlier at St. Coleman's Park. Simon Canning, disappointing result for Dundalk. We were the better team, should have won. Bowes are overrated, not sure why they're being handed the title by so many punters at this early stage. Aruby was very good tonight. Bowes could not deal with him.
I don't think anybody's handing anything to Bowes.
No.
I think a few weeks ago I was getting dug out to a bit by saying that I think Bowes will do much better this season, which people equated to, okay, I think he's going to piss the league.
Yeah,
the fuck out of everybody. I definitely don't think that's going to be the case, but they've improved in so many areas. That's so easily verifiable. Like, you don't have to be a total anorak to go, yes, they've made massive improvements in a lot of areas. And someone that I haven't mentioned, Rennie and his team, deserve a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. So, Hugh McGee, Blues are fecked. Yeah, we think so, don't we? Then looking at the hotline put up earlier tonight, Git, can anybody get their hands on sleeping pills for poor old Kevin Doherty? That's not nice, Git. Come on now. Colm, Longford going old school, two up top, causing havoc. Absolutely ran the Wexford defence ragged. I meant to say that earlier. It's great to see a proper out and out front two. Jesus, yeah. It's like those two boys have been playing together their whole life, and that only their second start together.
Jesus Christ. I Honestly, God, like, I think you said it on commentary about the SOS from back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, they were right. Now, I will say one thing. I think Dara Murtha has his, and I think you highlighted it already, his back to play,
unbelievable,
back to goal is absolutely sick.
Yeah.
It's like he can catch the ball.
And then Dean Williams, I suppose, with that little bit more experience, the runs he makes, that maybe Dara hasn't fully brought into his game just yet. He'll get there. But like, Williams is such a clever player. If he can stay anywhere fit at all,
if he can stay fit,
you can see what he's been at, the clubs he's been at. He's such a good footballer.
Yeah. But not only that, but I think just the final point on the two of them. Dara Murtha is able to... Dean Williams runs into places that he knows Dara Murtha can give him the ball.
Yeah.
And that might have happened maybe 10 times throughout the game the other night. Long ball up or a fizz ball into Murtha. He takes it down and he plays in Dean Williams. Dean Williams crossed the ball in for Erhu's goal the other night from a ball that Dara Murtha laid off to him.
I actually said it a few weeks ago on comms as well. I can't remember what game it was exactly, but Williams came on and he was whipping in some savage crosses. And I made the point, as a centre forward, it's almost like he knows exactly what sort of ball another player would appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you want Williams on the end of them more so than whipping them in. But we saw it with the first goal the other night. It was his cross. Now, it did take a little deflection to the cross, but it was his cross that led to the goal for Murtha.
Yeah.
So that's another bow to the string of Williams. He's not only a goal scorer, but he can set up chances because he's got an incredible delivery for a centre forward. Remember a couple of years ago, everyone used to ridicule Roy Hodgson because Harry Kane was taking the corners.
Mm.
But he's such a good crosser and passer of the ball. And Williams is the same. He's so good at passing and crossing the ball, even though he's a centre forward. So yeah, it's a really, really exciting partnership, and I'm glad that fair play to Colin for bringing that up. Nathan O'Reilly, massive win for Kerry against Finn Harps. Performances on the pitch still not good enough. Not enough chances being created. If we play as bad as we did against Finn Harps, Bray will destroy us on Friday. And Owen again, Bray could have a striking issue. Ring doesn't look up to it at this level. Need Acura fit, creating numerous chances and well on top of games, but can't put teams away. Sometimes a disgraceful decision is a little reminder of what can happen. I'm surprised to hear that about Ring. Saw him in pre-season playing for the Shells 20s against Dundalk. And as I said, he reminded me kind of a mini version of Sean Boyd, big physical presence. Mm-hmm. And he got a couple of goals this season. So I thought things were going well for the Shells loanee there. But Owen has a different viewpoint on it. But yeah, that's a good hotline this week. Plenty of really good contributions from our listeners as ever.
Absolutely. That means it's the end of the pod, and that means another milestone in our week. That brings us a bit closer to Prague. I'm very nervous.
Two more sleeps,
and we'll be standing in Prague.
I had a nap earlier, so I've got an extra sleep in.
Oh, shit. yeah, Jesus, just beside myself now.
Yeah.
Look, I'll see you on Wednesday for the fry.
Yeah,
be there on time.
I get the mortgage out for the fry in Dublin Airport.
Yeah, but yeah, look, for all the people that are going, have a safe and enjoyable trip.
I'm sure we'll bump into a few listeners. We always do. We're always happy to chat.
Yeah, the more shite we talk, the better. But yeah, look, just have a good time, and looking forward to Ireland taking their first step towards World Cup qualification on Thursday.
Please God, yeah. Thanks to our sponsors, Quinn AV and Barwon Betton, for sponsoring our flights to Prague. I wish. Maybe they'll get us to the World Cup. Who knows?
But, we'll get on to Michael O'Leary. He'll help us out.
Yeah. I mean, think of the publicity. Some live pods in Mexico, lads. You definitely want to sponsor that. You definitely want to get us there.
Oh,
all
yes.
Expenses paid. You definitely want us there, so just keep that in mind. But no, they did sponsor this week's show anyway, Quinn AV and Bar One Betting. So yeah, that's where we'll leave it. Fingers crossed, big week ahead. We'll be back next week. Yeah, we'll see you then.
Will we do it before Tuesday? Depending on how Thursday goes, right? Okay.
I just, let me put it on record. If we qualify, there will be an emergency pod.
On what day?
I don't know, but there will be an emergency pod.
We could do one in advance of the Town game on Saturday.
Oh, still have another game to get through. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But I think an emergency pod, possibly the Wednesday at some point could be a runner.
Okay.
It's not really an emergency pod though, because we'd be due to do an episode anyway.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, do you mean an emergency
pod? A bonus pod, whatever. There will be multiple podcasts. We'll do a podcast every bloody day if we get to work. Yeah. We'll do a daily countdown show.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay. That'll do. Cut it there. Let's get out of here.
Don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening. You can also keep up to date with the latest League of Ireland news by following Between Stripes on X. Until next time, thanks for listening.